crescendo, a gradual increase in volume, a musical passage, the first robotics theme for this year's game. You can't tell, my children are doing their robotics competition right now in Bonnie Lake, and I'm not watching it on my phone. I did watch it yesterday, and it's always exciting to see the different robots and how they're doing. But back to the sermon. For today, I was thinking of the terms of crescendo found in a piece of music or an opera setting. And I don't know much about opera. I do appreciate it. I'm particularly drawn to Phantom of the Opera, and most people are like, that's not a true opera. I know, but that's the first opera that I was drawn to. Funny story, my husband wooed me with songs from the Phantom of the Opera. But with the classical music, that's the first taste of music that I was really drawn to and appreciated. And all the different nuances and the stories that are told within classical music, and how it can inspire or invoke and change your emotions based on the tone or the setting of which it was composed, and what the composers went through and how their emotions are written within that piece of music and the different settings and the different pieces of it. And it's just amazing, and how it can start off light and then it raises up and they're clanging and the bashing of the music and then it drops back down. And many of the psalms and other scriptures were written to be sung and played in the music of the lyres, and you'll hear the lyres and the cymbals and the clashings and stuff. And they were sung as laments or praises, and they have inspired many of our hymns that we still sing today. And this week I was thinking of what it would be like for the scene if we encountered it today, if it was set in a larger classical piece of music or an opera, and what it might sound like to our ear. Would it be a clangy piece of music with the cymbals clashing, or with woodwind instruments, or even perhaps the strings, or like if a full orchestra was playing it, and how beautiful that might sound? Perhaps with the soft melody to begin, and then the rising of the tempo to the crescendo piece, where we'd sit at the edges of our seat in eager anticipation of what would come. And perhaps we'd be left on the edges of our seat until the next week as we wait for Palm Sunday to arrive. And throughout the Lenten season, we've been building. We've heard all the different pieces of the different passion parables, where Christ has been predicting his passion of what's going to happen. And we know what he's going to encounter when he gets to Jerusalem, for he's been telling and foretelling. And today, he's arrived in Jerusalem. And once again, he has to foretell what's going to happen. But today, he's at a festival. And as he's revealing to his disciples and to himself what is going to happen to him. And this is the first time, and we've switched to John, because this is the first time where he's publicly revealed what's going to happen. And he's revealed himself. He's telling them, this is the hour. The hour has come. And the impact that it takes, for good or for bad, and it's kind of like a true opera. So imagine with me, since the transfiguration, that slow crest of the harmony that's been building. And the instruments are slowly moving into the piece of music that's been building. Because he's been telling them since then, tell no one. With each encounter he's had, with the father that had brought his son to him to be healed, with his disciples that as they came off the mountain, he's been telling people, tell no one what you have seen. And all over John's gospel, when we'll see more in the later season, he keeps telling them, this is not the hour. He even tells his mom at the wedding of Canaan, this is not my hour yet. But he implores people, my hour has not yet come. So today, as I said, we've encountered this festival, and the Greeks have arrived, and they're like, we want an audience with Christ. And he reveals, the hour for the Son of Man has come to be glorified. However, it's not in that sense to be adored or worshipped that we'd normally associate with the word glorified. It's because in the same breath, Christ reveals that like a grain of wheat, he must die to be scattered, to have fruit, to be fruition, to bear much fruit. And like the other parables where he kind of explains it, kind of leaves him wondering what it means, he explains this one in actual clear detail because he knows what lies ahead of him. And he's accepted the cost that he must pay because of the love he has for the world and all those in it. And that he's been this faithful witness that he's chosen not to take the easy way out. And for John, so in the Gospel of John, unlike Mark, so Mark's all about mission and about revealing who Christ is. For John, it is all about this rebelling, kind of this resisting. He's resisting of the current social structure of the Roman Empire and the witnessing to the path that Christ is taking against that social structure. And John's recording of that resisting to that social structure. So each time Christ goes and encounters those on the fringes of society, John is recording that interaction and how Christ is going about resisting that structure. So each time Christ is doing that, he knows the penalty that he must pay for that. He knows what he's doing and he's willingly paying that price, knowing what lies ahead of it and why he's doing that, because of the love that he has for the world and all of those in it. Because he knows that it's not an easy path to take, and he's asking not only himself to do it, but he's asking his disciples to follow with him and then continue to do that after he is gone, because he knows the cost. And that by doing that, that they also will be honored by God for their sacrifice. So once more, Christ is showing those gathered that he is in relationship to Christ, with God. So when he says that and he's asking this, that he's like, what should I say? Father, save me from this hour. But it's not really a question. Because he says immediately, no, for this reason I have come to this hour. Father, glorify your name. And in this quiet peace, can you imagine as they describe in this section, for those that could not hear the voice of God, they heard those big cymbals crashing. But for those who could hear God, they heard that voice. I have been glorified and I will glorify it again. So they heard God's voice. And in this moment, Christ is saying yes. He reveals the kind of God whose love can no longer be questioned. He knows that it's revealing to the disciples that the mystery is being revealed to those, that this is God's Son, that all this stuff that they've been going through, that no matter what, they encounter God's love is with them. that even in death they will be forever sealed with God. And so for Christ, knowing this price, knowing that the hour has come, knowing that for the disciples there's going to be more life-altering encounters to be witnessed and professions to be made, they know all this, and for Christ, he accepts that. He accepts and surrenders to the actions that are to come. And for us and for Christ, it's opening up that free gift of grace and life to all the world. So imagine that sound of that orchestra, that piece of music that's been playing. And what does that sound like? Knowing that Christ said yes. Yes to the resisting of the social structure that was around him. And that he did not take the easy way out to accommodate the wrongs he saw being done to those on the fringes of society. Knowing that for Christ, that betrayal, the suffering of that was coming, and yet we know he was and is glorified on our behalf. We know that at the center of Christ's story is that incarnation and the embodiment of salvation that we freely get. And that it is found in the flesh of Christ, not apart from the flesh. We know that by Christ dying, we said that free gift of grace is made possible. And it's that gift that we get to receive. And it's an amazing gift. So my question for us, as we await all the instruments to take their place, as we anticipate Palm Sunday and Easter that are coming up, and we hear this beautiful piece of music each Lenten season, what is our response? How do we respond to Christ's sacrifice? Is it changing us throughout our lifetime? How do we respond to things that we see going on and in around us? And how to respond as Christ is continually calling us as beloved children? These are questions that I ask myself each day, and these are the questions I ask you today.